Welcome to everybody. Thanks for being here. It's our pleasure to have Arya Rajam with us tonight. This is Arya's new book, which is called Blood, Sweat and Tears. Okay, so this is a book, as she says, a book about the story of a young ballerina who's chasing her dreams between two continents, between Chennai and Moscow. Now, Arya comes to storytelling from a very interesting background. You know, she was born in New York, she grew up there as a child, and then she moved to Chennai. And she grew up in a family which had her great-grandmother, had her grandfather, and they were the prime storytellers in the family. And she eventually followed a course in literature, and eventually also courses in creative writing in India and in the States. And she has a very wide interest which leads her to writing, which includes music, theater, sports, all kinds of things. So before we, and I'd also like to introduce Jill to those of you who don't know who Jill is. She obviously needs no introduction.
I know now. Everybody.
Jill is our main theatre person for years and years and years, and she's produced all these fabulous plays, which has included dance and theatre. And there I am. So, okay. So let Arya say a couple of words first about her book. And then we'll take on from her, read parts of her book, and eventually have a Q&A with her. Jill and me will have a little Q&A with her. Arya would like then to distribute her books amongst you, for those of you who are interested, and maybe also take questions from you. Okay? Over to you.
So good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming here today. And I'd like to first of all thank Bridget and Pitanga for hosting me here for this book reading. And I'm very honored to share the stage with Anu and Jill today. So what I'm going to do first is I'll tell you a little bit about myself, and I'll talk about the book for about 10 minutes, about the theme of the book, which is like ballet and India and Russia and a girl chasing her dreams. And then we'll go on to the readings. So, okay. So I'm from Chennai, she said. I studied literature. This is my debut novel, which is called Blood, Sweat and Tears. So this is an idiom for, of course, a lot of hard work. This book is actually about a girl who is half Indian and half Russian. And she is born to an Indian man and his Russian wife. His Russian wife is called Irina. She is born in India, in Chennai. But somehow a cruel twist of fate takes Zarya and Irina from India to faraway Russia to Moscow. And both of them must struggle there amidst a lot of poverty and difficult conditions to survive. But Zarya learns ballet and she finds some kind of hope and light and interest in her ballet classes. So when she becomes a woman, she decides she wants to be a professional ballerina. And she puts in a lot of hard work to try and achieve this ambition, which for her becomes more intense as she grows older. So the book follows her on this journey, follows Zarya's journey to try and become a professional ballerina. And she does early on in the book, but then it follows all the drama and the world of ballet with the jealousies and the rivalries and all the other things she has to navigate to really stay where she is. So, okay, the protagonist of this book is a dancer, and having a protagonist as a dancer was definitely something I really enjoyed writing about in this fictional story. Actually, my mother, Anita, is a professional Bharatanatyam dancer herself. So when I grew up in Chennai, I remember as a young girl, when I would wake up before school, I'd wake up as early as 6 o'clock and I'd come downstairs to read the newspaper. And then I would hear classical dance music, and I'd see my mom and her group of dancers all rehearsing. And you know, it was really beautiful. It was beautiful music, and I really enjoyed the dancers' movements and watching them. And I got to watch a lot of Indian dance shows growing up. And when I became older, when I was like 18 and 19, I really think about how hard they work and how difficult their lives must be, because a lot of them were not even full-time dancers. They would like wake up at 6 o'clock, come practice, they'd go on to engineering jobs, corporate jobs, and still carry this passion for art with them that they felt that they couldn't do without. So I really observed, and I heard stories of many dancers who would even give up well-paying corporate jobs to just be full-time artists because they felt that was their true calling, that was their true calling in life. And I really admired the kind of passion they have, as well as a lot of the hard work they had to put in physically, emotionally, to try and, you know, take a shot at being a professional dancer, which is almost like one in a million, only you can make it. So the world of dance and the world of ballet, which is a backdrop for this book, is actually a world that is very difficult to stay in, and it's also very vicious and cutthroat. So did any of you read about the acid attack on the director of the Bolshoi Ballet recently?
Yeah.
Okay, you read.
How was it like that?
Yeah, okay. So this is really scary. The director of the famous Bolshoi Ballet in Moscow actually had acid thrown on his face by a male ballerina from the Bolshoi Ballet. And when I read about it, it turns out this male ballerina's girlfriend, who was also a ballerina with the Bolshoi Ballet, she was being kept out of certain parts because of this director. So to get his revenge, they actually threw acid on his face. And this was really scary to read. So this is just a small instance of the kind of intense competition and rivalry and politics that goes on behind a ballet group. And every dancer that is dancing has to really navigate all this politics. In addition to being excellent dancers, that's not just enough, right? They have to be on the right side of some people. They get on the wrong side of some powerful people. They can sabotage their careers. There are all those things to think about. So this is a really interesting world to set the book in as a backdrop for the book. And when I researched ballet, I really loved it. I read a lot of really interesting things about ballet, not just about how difficult it was physically and emotionally to be a ballerina and to stay thin and to always stay at the standard required of you. I also read a lot about not just the passion ballerinas have for dance, but about the rivalries and the intense, rivalries that actually go on. Well, when my parents lived in New York, my mother actually used to live very near to the famous Juilliard School of Ballet in New York. And she told me about the story, which really, it's again really scary, about the kind of competition that goes on. One girl who was a student at the Juilliard School of Ballet, she actually put crushed glass into another student's shoe. So the girl who wore them, she cut her feet and she couldn't dance for 6 months. So this is literally a very cutthroat thing that the other girl did, just to make sure she got ahead of her and the other girl had to fall behind for a bit, because everybody's really competing to be the best in that world. And like, there was this Hollywood movie called Black Swan with Natalie Portman, which came out a few years ago. And in that, of course, Natalie Portman's character plays a very psychotic, almost like a schizophrenic character, because she plays a ballerina who is so mentally fragile because she's going through a lot of emotional difficulties. All ballerinas are under so much pressure, both to stay thin, to be fit, to be good, and to stay where they are, because once a young arrival comes along, they can just replace them and they can just send this girl packing. They can cancel her contract. So that is the kind of pressure that ballerinas are under, that I have written about in this book, that the main character goes through. So it was a very interesting world to research, and it was really interesting to create a fictional ballet group for this book. I've created a fictional ballet group which Zarya, the protagonist, becomes a part of. And she has to, you know, go there and try and stay where she is. She wants to rise higher. She has rivals. She has to be on the good side of the director. She has to think of all these things. Additionally, she also has to be an excellent dancer. So there are so many things she has to think about. When I was researching this book, I actually read a lot of ballerinas' stories. And I also read a lot about the ballerinas that danced during the Soviet times, that is, even during the World Wars. And I was really fascinated by many of their stories because they had stories that were actually far more interesting than the ballerinas have today, because the ballerinas who danced during the World Wars and grew up during that time had to go through a lot of difficulties. Like Maya Plisetskaya, the famous ballerina, one of her parents was killed in the Stalinist purges, her mother was sent to a labor camp, and then she was adopted by an aunt, and then she finally became a dancer. But there were so many amazing stories like that. Even Balanchine's story is really interesting. And yeah, because it's amazing that despite world wars and all the Soviet dancers of that time having to relocate from one country to another and losing some of their family members and their parents and moving, still dance and music continued to flourish. So I really loved reading all that. And I did read a book about a ballet dancer as I was researching this. And it was a book called Dancer by Colm McCann, which is a really amazing book. It's one of the best books I've read. So this was inspired by the story of Rudolf Nureyev, the famous Russian ballet dancer who then defected to America. So when I read this again, I got to know a lot about the hard work and the kind of passion ballerinas put in, physically, mentally, emotionally, all the sweat they have to put in. And I clearly got the kind of passion that the character on the book, based on Rudolf Nureyev, carried within him. And finally, he was one of those dancers who, despite dancing in Russia, the government at that time for ballerinas in Russia was very strict. They were very military-like. They gave the ballerinas a very strict thing that they had to only dance in Russia. If they tried to leave, they would be in serious trouble. So they were not given complete freedom. And Rudolf Nureyev is one of the people who defected from Russia to America because he felt America was a country that gave him more freedom in just being able to dance with which group he wanted. So he left. But the scary thing is that after that, Soviet spies were sent to kill him. They tried to ruin his career. But he was patronized by Jacqueline Kennedy. And of course, he continued to dance and become a global sensation. So a lot of these stories were really interesting to read about. And when I was in New York last summer, I got to watch a ballet at the famous American Ballet Theatre at the Lincoln Center. And this was an experience I can really never forget. I got to see the famous ballerina called Diana Vishneva perform in the Romeo and Juliet ballet, and I was completely entranced by the whole performance. I actually learned ballet for a few months to research this, but I have to say it is extremely difficult physically. You know, I learned Bharatanatyam as well when I was a kid. This is a dance form that is much more difficult than Bharatanatyam, though it may look easy on screen. You know, when I saw live ballet, when I saw ballet videos, it looks very graceful, you know, the movements, and it looks like, oh, it's so easy, some of the steps look easy. But when I learned it, I really discovered how difficult it was physically, more than Bharatanatyam, keeping your back straight and keeping your arms stiff and all those things. So when I watched the ballet in New York, I was really completely entranced by how easily they were able to do the pirouettes and lift their legs high. And then when I researched this book, I read the autobiographies of some ballerinas to get an understanding of the world of ballet. So I read books by Allegra Kent and Barbara Milberg Fisher, who were both ballerinas in New York. They were both professional ballerinas in New York for many years, and both of them were part of the time when the famous George Balanchine was also choreographing with New York, with the ballet in America. So reading this book again gave me a lot of amazing glimpses into the world of ballet and the kind of passion that ballerinas carry within them for this art. I got to read very honest things from the dancers right from the time they started learning, from how their teachers were so important to them, like mentors, in shaping their technique and carving out their body movement to make sure they could have perfect technique in order to try and become professional ballerinas, to how precious their ballet shoes were, to a lot of stories about Balanchine himself, a lot of very interesting anecdotes that really showed how passionate he was about ballet and how a lot of the dancers admired him so much.
So,
of course, I've spoken about ballet for so long, but this is actually the theme of the book. The girl wants to be a professional ballerina, but even those of you who don't like ballet or dance will find it interesting, because ballet is the backdrop of the book. It is not actually all about what the book is about. It's essentially about a young woman in her 20s who's got a very far-fetched goal, and she is just ready to put in everything she has, all her hard work, everything in her heart and soul, to try and achieve this dream that has just means the world to her. To her, she has such a passion to become a ballerina that she chooses that path over other things, over conventional things like going to university and just studying a degree and having a stable job, because to her she feels like without dance that she can't live. That's the kind of passion that a lot of dancers have. They feel that the soul would be empty without dance. And this is the kind of intense passion that I've written about the protagonist carrying within her throughout the book. And there are a few scenes in the book set in Moscow in Russia. And the reason is that, of course, when I wanted to write about a professional ballerina, I wanted to set it partly in a European country. And I was very drawn to Russia. I was very fascinated by it because I've always loved Russian literature from all the Russian writers like Tolstoy and Chekhov. And Russia is also a country that has so much culture and history, as well as a rich tradition of ballet. So I have written some scenes there. The culture of it is also brought out in the book. And of course, since I'm from Chennai, I've grown up in India all my life, and I love the city so much, I have written some scenes in the book set in Chennai. And when I wrote those, there was definitely a lot of nostalgia in me because I love the city, and I've also made the character love the city eventually. So I hope you'll find that interesting. There's some of India and some of Russia. There are two different cultures that are in the book. And, well, the main character of the book is Zarya. Like I told you, her name is Zarya Krishnan, and she is the aspiring ballerina, the young woman whose story the book follows. So she was someone I really enjoyed creating as a character. She's very likable in many ways. She's very bubbly, she's cheerful, she's ambitious, but she's also got a bad side to her. She's jealous. She plots her moves in the ballet world very carefully, like who to be nice to just to carve her eyes. And she's very jealous of dancers who are better than her. So she's got all these, but all in all, she's a character that I hope you'll enjoy reading about. And she's got an Indian love interest. There's a Indian boy called Ashwin from Chennai who is her love interest, which forms part of the romantic subplot for this book. So those of you who like reading romantic things, there is some romance in the book as well. Okay, that's all about the book.
All right, so do you want to take on and read first?
Okay. Okay, I'm going to read a passage that is from the prologue of the book. Okay, this happens when Zarya has just tried out at an audition for a ballet group, and she's waiting for the directors to let her know who gets in and who doesn't. She stood waiting in her pale pink leotard in the tall-ceilinged audition room. The other two hopefuls stood on either side of her, the bright lights covering them all. They were inside the Moscow Star Ballet Theatre, where talented nobodies became somebodies. Three company directors sat at a rosewood table in front of them. Zarya could hear her breath as she consciously breathed in and breathed out. She felt sweat trickle down her forehead, but didn't wipe it away. Was her perfume too heavy? Her brown hair was in a meticulously done bun with a silky hair tie. Her feet sweated inside her new point shoes. She saw the stern-looking, grey-haired former ballerina whispering furiously to the man next to her. Did they think her jetés weren't good enough? Restless, she shuffled her feet on the wooden floor. This was the moment. To her, life without ballet was like lifetime in prison. She could never accept that. Ever. She glanced at the round clock that hung above the director's heads. When would they know? She pictured herself bowing regally as dozens of roses were thrown at her feet. But to an observer, her face was inscrutable. Her foundation felt so thick. The stony-faced man shook his head. She moved her eyes to her right. The blonde had enthralled the directors. Zaria had felt such envy when she had seen her perfect pirouettes. The blonde would surely get the part. Zaria swallowed and then strained her ears to hear what the directors were saying. She prayed fervently that they would like her. If she didn't make it, would she ever get a breakthrough? Get a role in any ballet? All the years of hard work may never materialize. What if she never made it and just auditioned for years until she was forced to hang up her shoes wistfully? It would always remain a delusion. The directors were certainly taking their time. They were conversing in hushed tones, in rapid Russian. 10 whole minutes passed. Then suddenly, they stopped whispering and sat back in their tall chairs. The stony-faced man in the center spoke first. He looked at the blonde girl with interest. "You were really very good. Perfect twirls," the man said to her, nodding. Zaria watched the blonde smirk and felt the dread inside her. No, no, no! She had lost it. So close.
All right. I'm on chapter 8, and this is another scene where she's probably doing her very first audition.
She's taking part in a ballet competition in this scene, and hoping to get discovered by winning a place in the competition.
Okay. Now, just excuse me if I squint a bit. I actually broke my pair of glasses. This is another one. I'm not used to it. So. Zaria pulled out the large oval mirror she carried in her bag and inspected her face. Eyes with thick eyeliner, heavy mascara, and pale eyeshadow stared back. She'd done her own makeup, and it was surprising that she had pulled it off when she hardly knew how to do it. A friend of hers from Olga's school had lent her a whole array of professional makeup. Zaria had practiced putting it on only a few times and wasn't good at it. At first, she just stared at the many brushes and tubes before her, without not even knowing what was what. Irina had slowly and patiently taught her how to apply the makeup, demonstrating strokes of brush. Looking in the mirror, she suddenly wished her mother had done her makeup that day. It was clear from her reflection that she had done a very mediocre job. She touched up the light pink blush on her cheeks. Her hair felt so heavy, with the innumerable pins that she had shoved into her bun. Her lipstick didn't seem to be even, and her foundation seemed patchy and a shade too light. But there was no time to set anything right now. She kept her fingers crossed that her fake eyelashes wouldn't fall off when she was dancing. The announcer's strident voice over the microphone called out another name that distracted her from her thoughts. Sorry about that. The competition required participants to perform a specific 1.5 minute solo variation of Esmeralda. Zaria went over the routine again and again in her head and recalled all the things Olga had told her to be careful about. Amongst all the other participants backstage, most accompanied by their coaches and mothers, she kept to herself. She sat all alone on a wooden bench, trying to tune out the many voices around her. The scents of so many kinds of perfumes were in the room, and she realized with a groan that she had forgotten hers. She probably stank and smelled terrible, but what could she do? Her red costume was new, and it fitted her well, although it felt a bit tight on the chest. She sat down, put on her ballet shoes. She tied the ribbon slowly and carefully, over her foot, around the ankle, and to the back again. Then she took the second ribbon over the first and around her ankle. Finally, she tied a knot on the inside of the ankle and tucked in the ends of the ribbon in as neatly as possible. She took a deep breath and then did the same with the left leg. As the competition continued, she fidgeted her hands and glanced at her watch. Then it was her turn before she knew it. She danced the variation of the Esmeralda piece and put in her best, the nervousness not visible in the performance, with every ounce of energy. The music flowed and she did all the steps as she had learned, the ones she had practiced to death. She finished her routine and then bowed, shooting a dazzling smile at the judges. As she walked off stage, the qualm started. But she shoved them far away. She had done okay, she thought. Yes, she had felt good over there. Not that that meant that she would make it to the second round. Or perhaps she had done better than she thought. She knew she needed to be realistic now. She had done what she could, and the rest was in the hands of fate.
So I'll read the third excerpt. This is from chapter 10, and it's at a moment in Zari's life where she has flown down to India.
In this past, she interacts with Ashwin, who's an Indian boy who has a big crush on her. So this is a bit of a romantic passage.
And she's flown down to attend a good friend's wedding. So. Zaria glanced at the mouth-watering dishes that were laid out for the guests on long tables nearby. The smell of chicken, roti, and biryani was tempting, but she knew she had to be careful about what she ate. I can't believe we're at the marriageable age already, Tara said suddenly, appearing next to Zaria. Zaria shook her head and smiled at her before answering. I really can't. We were all 6 years old just yesterday. Zaria took in how her childhood seemed to have flown by so fast. As she saw many of her school friends, some already working, some going on to master's degrees, she speculated at the direction her own life would take. She knew she didn't want the usual Indian path of marriage and a family before she was at least 30. She was in a distinctive place, very unlike where others stood. A life of constant performing and traveling was what lay ahead for her. but the picture seemed strangely appealing. "Hello, look who's here," a male voice said, shaking her out of her daydreams. Ashwin seemed to appear out of nowhere, looking smart in a blue shalwar and kurta. "Hi," she said, giving him a long hug. He asked how her ballet was going and how her mother was. She told him about her new show, and he said he was planning to work in his family business for a while before doing his MBA. He was still a complete cricket fanatic and even traveled around the country to watch some big matches. He mentioned that he, Devinder, and Farhan were already planning to go to the next Cricket World Cup. "So some of my friends from Moscow are really curious about India and want to visit," Zaria said, picking on a bit of spicy biryani from Ashwin's plate. "Oh yeah, tell them to drop by. And we can meet some Elenas, Igors, Victors, and Dimitris," Ashwin said with his usual sarcastic frankness and gentle teasing. "Shut up," she said, chortling at his repeated joke about how so many Russians having the same name. Ashwin's dark brown skin looked a little less tanned, and she assumed it was because he couldn't play cricket in the monsoons. His black curls were now grown to the middle of his neck. His dark eyes still had that flirtatious spark in them, and his arms looked more muscular. She admitted that he was really cute, but never said it aloud because his long-term crush seemed intense. She watched as he flirted with every other pretty girl, most of whom seemed to enjoy his attention. Girls thought he was hot, from what Tara and Gull had told her. But anyway, what did that have to do with anything? She was in touch with him on email, and they were now good friends. She came back to the chicken on her plate as she continued to chat with familiar faces, noting that she loved the sensual feel of the sari she was wrapped in. All thoughts about her future disappeared with the winds of care as the laughter of youth flowed around her.
Yeah. Okay, great. So first of all, Arya, thank you for that very nice introduction. And we read from the book, you have a bit, even have little flashes of what the story is like. Jill, would you like to take on the first question?
Okay. When I read it, of course there's an author's voice there, besides the character's voice and many other characters' voice. So I'm curious to know how much of yourself, how autobiographical is this story? How much of yourself is coming through the voice of the author?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, actually, the story does not have any autobiographical elements at all. It's completely fictional. There are no characters based on people I know. And it was a character I really enjoyed creating. Zaria and all the others are complete products of my imagination and fiction. And I created some characters who were Indian, some who were Russian. There are some interesting characters in the ballet world. Zaria's ballet rivals, the ballet directors, a lot of the people who form part of the backdrop of the book, which forms the main drama of the book, the way she has to deal with a lot of issues in the ballet world. Well, as for the narrator's voice, though this is in third person, yes, I have to admit there is a little bit of my voice that crept into the narrative voice, mainly because it was my first book. But, you know, otherwise I was trying to write it through the eyes of Zaria, who... And from the tone at the start, she does look at the world with a lot of wonder, because like any 20-year-old, she's dreaming of meeting her perfect Prince Charming. She's dreaming big dreams of being a ballerina. She has a very romantic notion of life. And it's only a little later on that she goes through hardships, why she becomes a ballerina, and then she has to grow up a little bit. So that is how I want the voice to be, through the eyes of a wide-eyed young woman who looks at the world.
So do you see yourself as a wide-eyed young woman who looks at the world like this?
Well, definitely. I mean, I'm in my 20s. I'm young, yeah. Mm-hmm. I do like to daydream of big things, whether it's writing or otherwise. So, yes, I was a bit like...
I mean, yeah. For a first novel, I don't think it's anything you have to apologize for.
Okay.
I think it's it's natural, even on a subconscious, unconscious level, that your own self comes through your writing, yeah, because it comes from somewhere. So it comes from you, and you, as you say, your imagination. But I think it's, because I saw you first, I met you, and I was trying to imagine what part of you was in the voice of the narrator.
Yeah, actually, the first book being semi-autobiographical is almost a classic. It's umpteen books like that.
Yeah.
And the only thing which would be interesting to know is how much, you know, regardless of the fact that you have invented the characters, you have been around dancers since your childhood.
Yeah.
So it probably did end up as some kind of an amalgam of different people you have known, either in Chennai or maybe out of characters. And you did mention a lot of books, a lot of characters. So they do coalesce somewhere.
Well, actually, again, like I said, I did grow up with a mother who's a dancer, and I do listen to her sometimes talking about the very vicious politics in the dance world, you know, how everybody, in order to climb, has got to be on the right side of somebody. How some dancers hate the others. They don't want this other dancer to get an award. They want to make sure the other dancer doesn't do well. And so when I listen to it, yeah, it's very intense politics. But I actually chose not to write about that. I chose to write about not an Indian dancer, but a ballet dancer, because I really thought that would be more interesting to read about for an Indian audience. For me, it was very interesting. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Because I studied Bharatanatyam and Odissi since I was 6 years old, and I studied ballet as well, and I think they're equally difficult as different styles of classical dance. So it felt a little bit like insulting to me because I chose Indian classical dance, and you said that ballet was much harder, but I don't agree.
The only thing I'd probably say to that is that she's been in Bharatanatyam ever since she was born.
Right.
So that's it was just ingrained. So it's
like style. Yeah. So, when you're like a little kid.
Yeah.
Let's say you started ballet when you were 5 years old and you trained in it like throughout your childhood, it wouldn't be as difficult to you as like Bharatanatyam.
Yeah, okay.
So that's what if you're speaking for the dancers that are here present listening to you talk about dancers, so it felt really insensitive when you said that.
Oh, okay. Well, I apologize for that. The thing is, I didn't learn ballet as a kid. I learned Bharatanatyam as a kid. And that is, of course, very difficult when you have to sit in Aramandi and keeping your hands straight. I did find it difficult. But ballet, I only learned a few years ago. And the thing is, I found it more difficult. Maybe it varies with different people.
Different,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I was...
The pelvis is forward, not back.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So Indian classical dancers, it's like really difficult, right?
Yeah.
And ballet is European classical dance, and then there's Indian classical dance in India. So, I'm just saying that they're
both equally difficult, I'm sure, yeah. For me, I found, maybe because I learned ballet so much earlier, I was finding it hard to just keep up, that's why.
Yeah, actually, let's come to that. The fact that you talked about a lot of the research, the stuff you read, the stuff you watched. But you actually did take classes to be able to write this book.
Yeah.
What were the things you were looking for when you learned?
Well, you know, I started writing this book 3 years ago, and when I began researching it, yes, I did want to learn a bit of ballet to really understand how the movement of ballerinas work physically. So I started learning grade one ballet at the Russian Cultural Center in Chennai, and most of the students were like 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, and they were very flexible, you know. When I start class, they could all split easily because they start young and then they go up to the old grades. They can lift their legs high, they can do everything. And me and a couple of other girls, one or two other girls, were like 23, 24, and we were curious to learn ballet. And because, you know, we thought it's such an exotic thing to learn, but then we found it so hard just to lift our legs high, just to keep our arms straight. And, you know, it was kind of funny. The younger kids could do everything, and we were like, before we started the class, I remember we had to do like 20 minutes of just warm-ups because ballerinas have got to do all that for their stomach muscles, for their back muscles. At the end of the warm-up itself, I'd be so tired. I'd go home with so many aches and pains and tell my mother, oh my God, it's so difficult. And I had to just continue learning just to research it. So
Okay. Did you do
that
in Bharatanatyam class also? Like,
huh?
Did you do that for Bharatanatyam as
well? When you're young.
Well, Bharatanatyam, I learned as a kid for many years. I learned from, let's say, 4 till about 13. So I remember that differently. I learned that when I was young. So I guess.
I don't know, like, that's what you see now. And you do, like, quite a lot of warm-ups.
Right.
That's yeah, great. Okay, that's great. Okay, so well, we never.
That's particular to Odissi, not so yeah, much to Bharatanatyam.
In Bharatanatyam classes, I remember as a kid, we never did warm ups before we started. We just used to start. So in the ballet, that really stood out for me. I was like, wow, they have to be strong.
Yeah.
All dancers have to be really strong, of course, physically and fit. And they. I read a lot about ballerinas and all dancers. They've got to, of course, look at their diet, just like athletes. People don't understand how hard dancers have to work, right? Because especially in India, some people think it's not as hard, but they have to work as hard as athletes. The way I see it, they've got to have a particular diet, they've got to have a particular fitness routine, they do warm-up exercises, like you said, some go to the gym a lot, they have to be strong with certain muscles, and a lot of them can get injuries on stage. My mom recently had this small toe injury, it was like a small fracture, but she still continued to dance with it because, you know, they have to have that kind of discipline. If they get injured, they can still not have to dance for some months, and maybe that can be a big step back for them, just like when it happens to cricketers, when it happens to tennis players, when it happens to footballers. So there is a lot of admiration I have when I read about, and I know from my mother how they have to be strict with their food, with their body, and be very careful with it.
Okay, I'll just shunt you to another part of the story. Because you have this whole thing which is going on with dance, and then you have the crossover with India and Russia and the two families and the two cultures and the difficulties which happen. So I saw that you looked at all these issues, whether it was to do with injury, with ambition, with all the politics and jealousy and success, all that implied. But at the same time, you have Zaria's mother when she first comes out to India and she marries and she, you know, but she's never accepted in the family. And there's the mother-in-law who's very, you know, who holds out and, you know, almost keeps her out. So I thought you wanted to explore that part of that social issue a bit also. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, actually, no. Since there are people who are not Indian, I don't think they should take offense at the way I've written in the book. Well, the thing is, traditional minded people like my grandmother, in my grandmother's time, she's not living anymore. But the thing is, they are very traditional minded. Like, let's say, we come from a community called a Brahmin community in India. And like, when my mother married a non-Brahmin, she was so furious. So if one of my mom's cousins, when I was 15, married a non-Indian, my grandmother was like really angry. She literally was like the mother-in-law in the book who was saying, I'm not going to accept her. So that is very extreme, but this is something
which also evolves, changes.
Well, I have to say I did this for a plot reason, because I wanted Irina and Zaria to go back to Russia and go away from India. So I wanted that animosity to be there just so that the story would take them to Russia.
Yeah.
I actually brought that in just for the plot reasons, because if Irina's Indian mother-in-law loved her so much, they would have just stayed in India and all that struggle wouldn't be there. The story would be less interesting. So it was just for the story.
Okay. Okay. Jill?
The youthfulness of the characters is very apparent. All the dreams that they have, the friendship I found very nice. The way that you write about friends, how girl friends talk together, and how they share things, secrets that nobody else shares, and how they talk about the boys. I found that very real, very truthful. Growing up in this family of dancers, I wonder, do you think intentional on your part to say, I'm not going to pursue a career in dance, I'm going to be a writer? Was it because you saw yourself? How did that happen?
Oh, well, no, I mean, I learned dance as a kid, but honestly, like I said, watching my mom be a dancer, I really know how difficult it is. It takes so much discipline. It's, you know, they have to be very passionate about it. If you're very passionate about it, whether it's dance or music, I'm sure they'll just try to do that. Well, I guess I found I loved writing so much and I wanted to go. But I also know how difficult the life of a dancer is, and I don't really have the discipline to don't do that. I could see.
Well, it's difficult physically, but
yeah, but
wouldn't you say writer has as much work to do? No.
Well, I just decided that. Well, yeah, I decided this was what I wanted to really go after. Okay. There was no other reason.
Wait,
wait,
and see.
Okay, let's see. Now, maybe we can talk about.
I'm interested.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Yeah. No, there is a lot. I mean, they do have some. My friend who's a Bharatanatyam dancer, she's just starting out. Yeah, she did take part in this youth talent competition and she won it. But yeah, there is a lot of competition in Bharatanatyam, I know. I mean, I'm not mentioning what, but I've heard my mom talking on the phone to her dancer friends about it. So it's common in any field. It doesn't have to be dance. It's the same in music. It can be in the corporate world, anywhere, right?
Yeah.
That's how it is. Okay.
Okay, now let's look at the future. What's the next project?
Well, I've started writing something else, a second book, which is... It's in the early stages. It's something completely different, like a different genre.
Okay.
But I definitely want to write more books, yes.
Jill, any last questions?
When you talk about, you will see how much blood, sweat, and tears in as a writer you will go through. I will be interested to watch your career and see what happens to it. How did you find this publisher? How did you get someone to publish this book?
Well, I don't know if I can talk about that. I did go through some rejections, and it was a hard process. I was just very lucky to get one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, being a first-time author, yeah.
I just wanted to know, did you know that Blood, Sweat and Tears was a rock group?
Oh, no, I didn't. Was it? Wow, okay.
Yes.
That's cool. Okay.
It makes me feel very old.
Doesn't it? What goes on must go on. Right.
It's a very famous rock group.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any questions they'd like to ask me? Do feel free.
Yes.
Okay. Why did I write this particular book?
For whom? Did you have an intention to talk to someone, or it just came out and you didn't?
Well, I consciously did decide like 4 or 5 years ago that I wanted to be an author. Well, I got the idea for this book about a ballerina. Thought it was a different idea of being an Indian for Indian readers. It would be a story they haven't read. And I brought India into it as well. And... Well, I wrote it for an Indian audience, but I don't know. It's dedicated to my grandparents, but I didn't write it for anyone in particular. Since I want to pursue writing seriously, this is just the first idea that I wanted to make into a book. Okay.
You have... Who else had a question?
You had one?
Okay.
I'm curious to know you in this earth, what do you wish to offer? What is your role as an author? Because you want to be an author, I hear.
Yeah.
And what do you want to offer to us, to the world, to the...
Wow. I'm a first-time author and I don't know how to answer that. Okay. Well, I just hope I can improve writing with the next book, and I hope... Some of my friends said they like this book a lot, so I hope I can improve with the next book so readers will appreciate what I write. So that's all I've got to offer. Okay.
I have a question about the story. In the story, her character is really into touring and becoming a prima ballerina, performing and reaching that professional level as a dancer that inspires her, as shows and traveling and performing. And then all of a sudden, she ends up pregnant in Chennai. And then she's okay with that. She's okay with that. She's like, okay, you know what? I want this now. And so it's sweet. It was all her dreams. She sort of.
Well, no, actually, okay. That's the ending of the book, but no, I've mentioned, if you notice, that her contract ended, so even if she wanted to dance more, they're not going to give her another contract. No, actually, that's not... she was a dancer with a group. I mentioned that her contract ended. So even though she wanted to dance more, I haven't mentioned that, but even though she wanted to dance more, her contract ended. So she decides that she has no choice but to the tie-on, then she decides to follow her heart at the end. I don't know. Well, no, actually, it was... Okay, the thing is, in the book, I haven't mentioned the years that passed, but when she first says no to the proposal, it is years later, like at least, let's say, 2-3 years later that she actually marries him. Because, let's say, she at that when she first says no, she just wants to just focus on her dance career and stay in Russia, because she can't have a dance career in India. But then, a few years later, her contract ends, so I haven't written why, it's just that maybe much more talented younger dancers come and they say they have to let her go. So that's when there's a side of her that really likes India and Chennai, and she decides she wants to come back. So that's when she just decides to follow her heart, and then that's just how I wanted to end it.
I'll have a question on that, but why don't you go ahead?
No,
Anu's a friend of my mom's, and this is a city...
Good question.
Wow. Actually, okay.
No, go ahead. Let's
my mom
answer.
Mom and I just bought a small place here. I'm hoping to come and spend some time here on a weekend to really explore the city a little more, because I've been here once before, like a week ago, to talk to Anu, and I really love the place. It's really... I know, it's really beautiful. I just wanted to come here and talk to all of you, because I thought it would be interesting. I'm a first-time author. I've got to keep letting people know about the book, because otherwise no one would know about it.
Okay.
That's the thing.
That's
what we have to do.
That's the deadly truth. But the other side of it is, when she wrote to me first, I said, what am I going to do with her, you know? She hasn't a clue about Auroville. Why does she want to bring the book here, you know? And then slowly, you see, it's by doing it that she comes to know about Auroville, and it puts her into, you know, answering all these questions, getting more into her book. And we can, you know, like Jill and I and Grace, who read the book earlier, we all three had a similar point, you know, what Tejas just raised. That was very quick, that transition. And
it was
and
quick.
We, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She,
this
the whole
is.
Book she wanted to
yeah.
Dream, the dream,
right.
Dream, become, and you don't let go of that. I
yeah.
don't do that yeah. personally.
Yeah.
So I'm not ready to, like, settle down and have a baby in this head. I don't need this, I don't need touring, I'll just keep going.
Yeah,
like,
right. Okay, so the question we had was perhaps in what we were missing slightly. This is not a criticism, it's just something, you know, to discuss. Is that, you know, you have this transition of her coming and going, and on the one hand, she is this person so dedicated, so, you know, ambitious, who wants to pursue and not have anything else to do with life, with a romance, with marriage and everything. But that transition which makes her decide, and those transitions when she comes to India back and forth, as though what some of us missed was perhaps a certain inner reflection that was missing in the character. And perhaps, you know, you'll explore that further, like you say, when you explore a next topic or a next subject.
Yeah.
But that was just one thing. We felt that was a bit too quick.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I do welcome criticism, being my first book. So I want to improve on that for my next book. So thanks a lot. I'll work on that.
Okay.
So I'd like to just distribute copies of this to all of you. Okay? So
I hope you'll enjoy the day.
Can everybody please join us for snacks outside? Something to drink, some lemongrass, some cake.